I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it.
Emotions are everything. Why? Because emotions prompt our action. So yeah. The more we can embrace the full spectrum of our emotional experience, the better, the richer life is. That includes, by the way, sadness, grief, anger, frustration, all of it.
This is Your Kick-Ass Life Podcast, episode number 282 with guest Dr. Sasha Hines.
This is the Your Kick-Ass Life Podcast with Andrea Owen. A no BS guide to self-help and badassery. Because ladies, let's face it, life's too short for it to not kick ass. And here's your host, the girl who serves it up straight with a side of crazy, Andrea Owen.
Hey there, Ask Kickers. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. Of course, I am so glad that you are here. May has been quite a month over here at Your Kick-Ass Life headquarters. I went to Amsterdam to speak at a festival. I hosted a workshop retreat with the women in my mentorship masterclass group program here at my house in North Carolina. And I'm about to go to Savannah, Georgia to celebrate my best friend's 40th birthday. Amy Smith over at The Joy Junkie, if you don't know her, you should, is turning 40, and the theme is A Shorty is 40. So we're very excited about that. And if you missed it last week, I made an announcement, which I'm going to repeat it in case you missed it. For those people who are members of my Patreon page over at patreon.com/YKAL, those of you who support the show every month, thank you from the bottom of my heart for that. And I'm going to start coaching people here on the air. I kind of want to say live on the air, but it's not live. We're recording it ahead of time. I guess we could do live. There's just more pressure that way. And I don't know. This is how we're doing it. We're recording ahead of time private coaching sessions that are going to be not private anymore because they are going to be recorded here for the podcast. And I'm opening it up for applications to members of my Patreon supporters. So patreon.com/YKAL to grab that link and to apply for one of these coaching spots here on the podcast. And I'm so excited. We will probably roll those out. I'm thinking, maybe June or July. I don't know. I'm very kind of like fly. I must drive my team crazy. I'm kind of fly by the seat of my pants, like all of a sudden, like, let's do this. And we'll just figure it out along the way. I'm an 8 on the Enneagram and I'm an Aries. So we tend to be impulsive and I make impulsive emotional decisions. Is anybody else out there like that? I don't like to research. I mean, I like to plan out ahead of time. I do like a good plan, but when I make a decision, I make a decision and I'm like, let's go, ready, come on, let's do it. That's just my personality. So we're running with it. I'm super pumped. Get your application over there, patreon.com/YKAL, and I hope I get to be on the phone with you soon. Dr. Sasha Hines is here. She's my friend. She is very, very smart and talks about all of the things we love to talk about over here on the podcast, about negative self-talk and perfectionism and all of those things. I know you're going to love this conversation, but before we jump in, let me tell you a little bit about this woman. Sasha Hines is a developmental psychologist and life coach, an expert in positive psychology, lasting behavioral change, and the science of getting unstuck. Dr. Hines has leveraged her academic expertise as a former faculty member at the University of Pennsylvania's Master of Applied Positive Psychology program to give her clients the tools to change their lives for good. In her private coaching practice, she helps achievement junkies feel as good on the inside as their lives look on the outside. A graduate of Harvard University and a working mom, she's lived life on the front line of the battle with perfectionism, so she can help you with that too. So without further ado, y'all, here is Sasha. Sasha Hines is here, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
I'm pumped.
Me too.
I'm super excited to talk to you because I'm excited when I get to talk to someone who I know in real life. Mm-hmm. And legit know that you are cool. You never know with my guests.
That's just your opinion.
Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding. Everyone's fine that comes on. And I'm excited to talk to you because this topic too. And as I was talking to you about before, I've had some positive psychology, quote unquote, people on, but mm-hmm. I don't think to the extent that you have studied it, like you made it your J-O-B, got a PhD in it. And so let's start there. That's where I want to start is what is positive psychology for people who I'm sure have heard the term, but aren't sure what it actually is. And how did it get started? I mean, I know it's gaining popularity.
Yeah. Well, I got my master's degree in positive psychology I started in the fall of 2005. And it was the first year that Martin Seligman, who wrote Authentic Happiness, it was the first year that he was offering the master's program. It was the first master's program in positive psychology at all. And we were the first 33 people to get the degree, which is so cool.
The maiden voyage. Yeah. How awesome.
Yes. You know, we were the pioneers. It was really fun. It was an amazing year for many, many reasons. Because we were the only program, you know, he invited all of his colleagues to come and teach us, which meant that we were being taught by, you know, heads of departments of great universities. Like those were our professors. And it doesn't maybe sound like such a big deal, but when I got my PhD and was like back in normal school, I was like, oh, right. People are taught by people like me, teaching right. TAs, you know, and you're like,
and these
oh,
are
right.
probably like the people who taught you were like authors of books that most people
oh my
have
gosh.
Read. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So here I am. I'm like 26 and 25, turning 26 maybe. And it was like drool worthy roster of professors that were coming to teach us. And, you know, and I was like, oh, ho-hum. I mean, it was really exciting, but I did not fully understand how incredible it was until after the fact. So,
but yeah, these are like personal development rock stars.
Rock stars. It's like every single self-help book is based on their research,
yes,
actually.
Exactly. I would have been starstruck as well.
Oh my gosh. It was truly by far the most exciting academic experience I've ever had. It was really fun. But Marty started the whole thing because he had been president of the APA, the American Psychological Association. And when he was president, he challenged the entire psychological community and, you know, with this question, which is why are we spending, you know, most of our research dollars and our brain power trying to understand negative emotion, right? Or negative psychological experience. And most of the white papers that were written, you know, all of those academic papers that are on PsycINFO, you know, five articles that were written about, you know, disease, disorder, dysfunction, like mental illness, only one article was written on mental health, mm-hmm. like happiness, well-being, which really doesn't make any sense because if you're thinking about like the normal population, on average, about like 17% of the normal population, you know, experiences mental illness. That's a lot, mm-hmm. but that still means there's like 80% of the population,
right?
That's functioning.
It's sort of like if the analogy is like, if it was a lot of helping people who were already sick. So instead of people, like if you, so it's like people who have like heart disease and high blood pressure who are like
exactly
diabetic or bedridden. And why not help them? That's why people go to the gym ahead of time to try to help themselves. Okay. So that's what positive psychology is.
Well, I think that there's like a real corollary in terms of thinking about it exactly that way, which is thinking about it in terms of the medical model, which is, you know, we've created this medical model where you go when you're acutely ill.
Right.
To get to not ill, right? And we've seen in the last, you know, 40 years, this entire industry exploding about physical fitness and, you know, preventative medicine and functional medicine. And it's like addressing the whole person in order to like, what if we, like, here's a, you know, brain exploding idea. What if we prevent these diseases that and like problems that people are going to the doctor to see, right? What if we could nip that stuff in the bud? So there is this sort of the same questions were arising in the psychological world is we've really based our field on the medical model, which is we're looking at illness as opposed to how do we help people become healthy?
Yeah. Remain healthy mentally and
healthier,
and emotionally.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like what we call optimal human functioning.
Yeah. Well, which brings me to, you like to say, you know, that you help people manage their mind. So I know that's a super broad general question about what you do, but what do you, like if someone asks you, like, what do you do personally with your clients? What is that?
Well, so there's a difference between positive psychology and cognitive psychology. Positive psychology truly is studying well-being and happiness and what we call optimal human functioning, right? So it's like studying people who are thriving and kind of reverse engineering that. Like, what are they doing differently than the rest of the population to feel great and to be doing really well? Whether it could be like the exceptional talent, exceptional well-being, like that's what we study. Cognitive psychology, we're looking at how your thoughts create your psychological well-being. So it's slightly different, but obviously they're really quite related because our thinking is what creates our emotions. So when our thinking is irrational, which by the way, if you're human, your thinking is irrational. That's the deal.
Everybody.
Nobody is exempt. When your thinking is irrational, then it creates all of these negative emotions, and negative emotions, because of the way that we are just designed as creatures, when we feel negative emotions, there's a thought action repertoire, right? So there's like the thought, then there's emotion that mediates it, and then there's an action that follows. That's basically how our brains work, right? So when we're feeling a negative emotion, negative emotions prompt immediate action and a very narrow range of possible actions. So what I mean by this is that if you're feeling fear, there are not that many possible actions that come out of fear.
Right? Running away.
Flight or freeze.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. And like everybody has their, you know, like I'm a freeze person. I feel fear and I'm like deer in headlights. My IQ drops about 100 points. You know, I can't think of anything to say. What? But other people react to fear differently, but there's a very narrow band of behavioral responses to fear. Mm-hmm. What positive emotions do is they broaden this thought action repertoire. So what that means is that there are many more behavioral options when we're in positive emotions. So think about when you're feeling like awe, gratitude, curiosity, love, hope, joy, you know, and serenity. There are literally infinite amount of behavioral possibilities that come out of those emotions.
Interesting. So
our thinking matters so much. Like our thinking matters. Our thoughts are just literally just like words with punctuation in our, you know, letters made into words with punctuation in our brain. They're really meaningless. But the reason they matter is because through this process of thought, emotion, you know, behavior, our thoughts end up creating our behavior and actions.
We
put meaning
around
it. That's why our thoughts matter so much.
There's There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed? Finding a unique gift that they'll love, that's personal and that they won't already have, can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then a Songfinch musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise.
Well, it's interesting to me because, and I have no idea, you know, I did not go to school for 800 years like you did for this, but I'm curious what you think of this.
So I'm not sure that that's something I should be so proud of.
I just have like tried to figure it out on my own. And one of the things, because I tell the story and I call how when I got to like young adulthood, and really it wasn't until probably 12, 13 years ago where I realized how I call it like emotionally illiterate I was. I just didn't know how to, I didn't know how to express emotions. They were, I was putting so much meaning around them. And one of the things that has helped me is that I actually don't call them negative emotions anymore. Mm-hmm. I just call them challenging emotions because I feel for me, because I tend to be so dichotomous in my thinking where it's like, it's good or bad. There's, you know, there's good food, there's bad food. There's good emotions, there's bad emotions. So for me, it's been helpful just to not call them negative emotions. It's helped me tremendously because I'm like, oh, it's just grief. Like, what if that was just it? And for someone who has struggled to wrestle with these, you know, harder emotions, that's been helpful. So is that just something that's like the lingo of positive psychology, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think that you're doing a really smart thing, which is that's managing your mind, by the way. That's you doing that. Mm-hmm. No, because you're realizing like, okay, when I'm thinking of this as a negative emotion and then my thought is like, oh, I'm feeling something bad.
I have to get out of it.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It makes you want to avoid it more as opposed to opening up to it. Right. So you're just changing the way you're thinking about it to help you become more open, which is exactly what you want to be doing, right? To get curious about it as opposed to like shutting it down. Mm-hmm. I think that I agree. Like there's a range of emotions that we feel. Labeling some as bad and some as good, I think is not useful because sometimes like serenity is totally unuseful. Serenity can be a completely unuseful emotion sometimes. someone is, you know, hurting my child. Serenity is no bueno. Right. So there are times when you, when that doesn't make sense. And there are times when anger does make sense. There are times when guilt makes sense. So I think the idea is, like, are you being deliberate about your thinking so that your emotions are moving you toward the life you want to be living and who you want to be, like, to your emotions are moving you toward your valued self. And again, like, I think there are gratuitous, you know, because it's easier to know what I'm talking about, negative emotion. Like, there are gratuitous negative emotions and there are instructive negative emotions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for telling me I'm doing something right.
Yeah, totally. That is exactly right. Because sometimes, like, you know, it's the whole game is emotions. Like, emotions are everything. Why? Because emotions prompt our actions. So the more we can embrace the full spectrum of our emotional experience, the better, the richer life is. That includes, by the way, sadness, grief, anger, frustrate, all of it.
Yes. Okay. We're probably going to circle back to that, but there's one thing I want to ask you that I thought of, right? I don't want to forget about it because the question I hear over and over again, and for those people that don't know, I have a certification with Brené Brown's work and her methodology around her research on shame. And that is directly related to the feelings of worthiness and, you know, the feeling of not enough. And I know that that is what some of the work that you do as well. So what, because it's the $1 million question that we hear all the time, like, how, and I can tell people my experience of this, but I'm super curious of what, just, I guess, just start talking. Like, what is your speech around worthiness and not enoughness? And more specifically, what are the steps that people can take to get to that place of worthiness?
Well, I mean, I think that all of our emotional suffering on some level can, or, you know, psychological suffering, if you pull back the veil, like if you pull back the curtain far enough, it's always a not enough issue.
Yeah.
Always.
Like,
not smart enough, not pretty enough, not funny enough, not lovable enough, you know, not talented enough. Like, that's, it's always at its core, it's some not enoughness. And the good news is you can walk around the world and look at everybody in the eye and be like, oh, good, you're suffering from the same thing that
man,
I am.
Man, woman. Yeah, it doesn't discriminate. Yeah.
Everybody has this on some level. So, you know, I think that, and actually I was think about this too. If, you know, you think about, like, shame is such a hiding emotion. And, you know, even in the Judeo-Christian tradition, if you think about the story of Adam and Eve, what the first negative emotion that they experience, or challenging emotion they experience, is shame.
Yeah.
Like, the first thing they do is, right, they eat the fruit and they're in the garden, they're in, like, lovely paradise, everything's wonderful. And then they eat the fruit and all of a sudden God's like, where are you? And what, they're like covering themselves
up. Naked. Right? Don't look.
They're naked. Yeah. They're like, don't look at me. I think that's like, it's such a universal experience. Like, it's the first story in, at least in the Judeo-Christian tradition about human beings. Like, I find that to be fascinating because I do think it's like, it's at the core of it's at the core for everybody.
Yeah. At least of this culture. Absolutely. Positively.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because here's my experience in it. And here's how I explain it to people is that I, for a long time, thought that there was like this answer, like there's this solution and I'm going to get there. Being the overachiever that I am, I'm going to hack into this. And maybe that's one of the reasons I was so drawn to her work. But what I have found in my experience, and this is the gist I get from when Brené talks about it, is that it's kind of a constant striving. It's a roller coaster. It's peaks and valleys. And there are some times where I'm feeling so worthy. And it's not just because of my achievements, which it used to be, but it's because of the health of my relationships. It's because of the way that I'm speaking to myself. It's because of what I am choosing to focus on and my thoughts and everything that you've been talking about. And then sometimes I fall into that trap of feeling not enough. But the difference is now is that I know when it's happening and I can choose to manage it instead of before, where I would just let that take me away like a water slide and not know where I was going to end up. And then I end up making choices and decisions and treat people a certain way because I was in that place.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I explain it now, that it's not a place. It's not a destination. It's just this constant journey that we're all on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I work with a lot of high achieving people or people that are, you know, that have externally look like everything's really going very well.
Yeah.
But the truth is like, and this is, I have a sort of, you know, I hold it with a grain of salt. Like there is so much, and I'm a goal setting junkie. I love to set goals. And, you know, I think it's really important to sort of know what the destination is. Like, what are you going after? It really matters. Mm-hmm. But you can also be on that achievement treadmill, like, you know, where you just are desperately trying to achieve and, you know, get more accolades and more little, you know, badges and trophies and all of that, just to feel like to just maintain that sense of self, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, you're just like running away, you know, sprinting away from that feeling of unworthiness. And the only way you're able to do that is by, you know, collecting these accolades over time. And that can work, but it will leave you so burnt.
Yeah.
And so exhausted. And I think everyone at some point will hit that brick wall of like, I can't do this anymore. Like this is right. You sort of think like, for what? What's the point? You're like, you're constantly running away from that feeling of, you know, like you're hustling constantly for your worthiness, which is just exhausting. And, you know, when you begin to realize like, okay, wait a minute, my sense of value and my, you know, my sense of worthiness or like just liking who you are, mm-hmm. That is my work in my brain, right? Like there's no external. And I think what happens is that people achieve a lot and they're like, I should feel amazing about myself. Isn't it strange that I don't?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that to me is when like the fun work starts.
Me too. Like I get all giddy because that's when I think that they seek out someone like you or me, where they get to that place where they have checked off all the boxes and they're, mm-hmm. and they're standing there, like looking at all of their trophies and accolades and you know, diplomas on the wall. And they're like, why did this not bring me what I thought that it would, what was promised right. to me? And okay. Do you have experience with that?
100%. I mean, I feel like my entire life, like this is my life, you know, in a snow globe. But yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I was diagnosed with a lot of learning disabilities and I always thought that I was not smart enough. So how do you deal with that? Well, you get a bazillion degrees. Like yeah. that's a good way to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. But then you get the degrees and you're like, oh, dang it. That thought is still there because all of those actions, not all the time. Like I am so grateful. I look back. I'm like, I'm so grateful that I made the choices that I did because I love what I do. And I think Penn was a real turning point for me. Like it was the first time I was going after something in academic, like from a place of true passion and joy. Like mm-hmm. it came out of a completely different emotion. It came out of a like positive emotion
yeah.
as opposed to, I must go to an Ivy League college. I must, because if I don't, then like the jig is up
yeah.
that I'm not smart enough. Right. So all of that striving and all of that energy and all of that hard work was fueled by my, you know, anxiety, worthlessness, all of that. Right. So is it any surprise that like when you cross the finish line and you check the box but all of that is fueled from, you know, worthlessness and anxiety, mm-hmm. you're like, isn't it weird? I don't feel good. No,
totally I found it infuriating. Isn't I don't know about you.
Yeah.
I felt like,
you're like, I'm standing here with a Harvard diploma and I feel like shit about myself.
Right. I felt like I'd been cheated. What? And I didn't even get as far as you did. I had an epiphany when I had got my bachelor's degree in exercise physiology and I was about to apply. San Diego State has a dual master's in nutrition and exercise physiology. And I was talking to the dean and everything. And I was like, got something told me like just not to do it. And then I realized that I was doing it for the letters after my name. Like that was really yeah. the only reason I had, mm-hmm. it's not that I had lost interest in the topic, but it was, I couldn't really see myself doing it forever and ever, amen. And I really had to take a step back and look at them. And I'm glad that I did. And so here's where it gets, I feel like, tricky. And I kind of want to go in this direction because I feel like my audience might really relate to this. And it can be a double-edged sword because on one hand, and I still am, I'm almost 44 years old and I'm highly motivated when people underestimate me.
Oh, yeah.
I am like, so you and I, we're in a mastermind together, and there's a woman in there who told this story. She posted in the group. I don't know if you saw this post, but she said that her financial advisor, she's married, and they had called her husband to ask the question. And like her husband wasn't even on this particular money account that they had. And she was like, I'll fucking show them. And I was like, all caps, like, yes, woman. Because that type of shit, like, don't challenge me, because I'm going to go twice as hard. So on one hand, I think that it has served me. On the other hand, I have definitely been in that place where I have been motivated by anything, really, got to the other side of it, and then been a little disappointed at what it brought me.
Right. I know. I mean, we're human beings are a conundrum. I know what motivates us is really fascinating. I also have that like button to push, you know, if someone underestimates what I can do, the reverse psychology, I'm like, I'm in. Mm-hmm. One time when I was in my early, like mid 20s, we were out to dinner with someone who owned this outdoor survival school called Boulder Outdoor Survival School. And it's pretty gnarly. Like, no, you don't have any sleeping bags. You just have like a blanket, a seatbelt strap, pea cord. And I mean, it's like
some
really
leaves,
bare
like
bones. And the whole idea is like, you're going into the wilderness to like survive as if you were in a plane crash, right? And like, you have nothing. And we were all sitting around at the table and he's like, yeah, I mean, he was just throwing it down sort of like, I don't think you could probably, like you guys probably wouldn't be interested or you couldn't do it. And I literally went home that night and signed up for it. I was like, oh yeah? Oh really? You don't think I can do that? I mean, it's so bonkers. And then 6 months later, here I am in like Provo, Utah, finishing up the course. And he was there and he was like, what are you doing here? I was like, well, you threw down the gauntlet. So I just finished it.
Oh my God, where's my prize?
Right? But so like I have that too. And I'm still really proud that I did it. Right? But I think as I get I actually think that's kind of like fun. It makes it into this like weird personal competition, right? Like, who am I proving it to? Like, nobody. I'm proving it to myself, right? So that's, but I think that's where the achievement stuff is fun, when you're like, okay, let's just see what I can do. Let's see what I'm capable of, right? Like, I just want to challenge myself. And if I don't do it, no big deal. You know, I can.
That's the key right there, what you said.
Yeah. Like if I don't finish or I don't accomplish it, or I do the race slower than I wanted to, or the launch is a bust, it's done. Like, do I want to do it again? And if I do want to do it again, how can I do it smarter or more successfully and get curious about it? But when it becomes about your identity, like I'm not good enough, or I didn't cross the finish line in the race, so I suck, you know, or I did this launch and it failed in, you know, according to what I wanted to do. And so I better just like pack it in because it's not going to work.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
Yeah, it definitely, I think it's some of it's about getting to know yourself. Like, A, of course, what we were talking about, what motivates you, and B, like for a long time, I'll give you an example. I would sign up for races, whether it was a triathlon or a 10K or something, so because that would motivate me. Like, it was the fear of like public humiliation for me, yeah. that's a motivator.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't want, I heard the story once of this, this woman I worked with said that her friend had signed up for this triathlon and brought all her friends to come cheer her on. And it was in the swim portion was in the ocean and you had mm-hmm. to get past the waves. And for like 45 minutes, their friend could not get past the waves. And they were like, it was just painful to watch her just struggle and struggle and struggle. And she finally gave up. And like, ever since I heard that story, I was like, that will never be me. Like, never. So that fear of like just totally shame and humiliation has motivated me. But I wanted to get to a point, and this is actually just recent, where I'm like, I don't want to need that to motivate me to be physically healthy. And I've since changed that. But my point is that to get curious about what motivates you as well yeah. as the outcome, like, is the outcome going to dictate how you feel about yourself as a whole? That's what I want the takeaway to be for people.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, like, how awesome is the woman who couldn't get past the waves and invited all of her friends? Like, that is the best story. Like, she's at a dinner 8 years later, like laughing her ass off telling the story, right? Yeah. Like, that's funny. And I think that's what makes our life God, actually awesome. Like, yeah. who wants to have the boring life where they're like, yes, I went after that, nailed it. Like, that person's insufferable, right? No, like, we all have a human life and we make mistakes and we do incredibly silly things. And have a public, you know, a public face plant and it can be a, like the funniest thing, right? Like yeah. years later. So I think it's all about recognizing, right? Like A, what motivates you. But again, like when you're doing, like when someone like challenges me, you know, that like gets me going in kind of this like fun, competitive way, mm-hmm. as opposed to like, if I don't achieve this, like I am going to have to like hide because I'm a useless, pathetic person right. and I must achieve this. Otherwise, you know, I'm going to have to own up to the world that I don't even deserve to be here.
Yeah. There's a big difference.
Oh my, big difference.
Well, I want to switch gears here because I want to ask you this one thing. And I think you and I briefly talked about this when we met in January. And one of my favorite self-help books is The How of Happiness. And can you pronounce her last name for me? Sonia?
Oh, Lubomirsky.
Lubomirsky, yes.
She was also one of our professors.
I had a feeling.
Yeah.
It was her and her friends that wrote this book about the science of happiness. So can you mm-hmm. explain to us, like, basically she's talking about that everyone is born with a set point of happiness and that your circumstances really don't dictate all that much, you know, yeah. your happiness. So can you talk to us yeah. a little bit about that?
Well, so this, I mean, it may sound sort of like a duh now because it's almost 20 years later, which is so crazy, but close to it. But when this finding, what they did is they looked at a number of, you know, I don't know how many participants were in the study, but what they were looking at is how much, actually, I do know, they were using twin studies. So they had identical twins and they were looking at how much can we attribute their, you know, well-being to genetic, to heredity. So like what you're born with. And, you know, we all have different, there's the big five personality traits, you know, whether you're open to experience or not, like whether you're extroverted or introverted, you're easygoing or more neurotic, neurotic's gotten a really bad rap. But anyway, that's the technical term.
Are you personally offended by that one?
right. It's like, everyone's like, dang it, I'm neurotic. But so everybody does have like a, you know, you came out of the womb with a particular set of personality traits. And so what she found in these twin studies was that about 50% of people's well-being was attributed to, because they're looking at twins who are separated, right? So they're identical okay. twins, so exactly the same genes in two different environments, right? So 50% of what explains the variance, so the difference in well-being score between people was explained by heredity. Mm-hmm. Only about 10% was explained by external circumstances. So, you know, where you live, whether or not your parents are divorced, whether you're married, not married, whether
childhood trauma, like, money, child, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Okay. What your job is, like all of those external factors, whether you have kids or not, and which leaves 40% when what they found was like 40% of your well-being is malleable, is due to like the difference in score is due to deliberate exercise and activity. like things that you do to increase your well-being. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't, you know, genes matter. Yeah, genes definitely matter, but you have a lot of room to change your life. You have a lot of room to feel better. So even if you weren't born, I mean, some people are born with more activity on, I don't remember which side of the brain it is, but there's one side of the brain where you, if you, they do scans of babies and they'll see like some have more activity on one side of their brain in the, you know, in the neocortex. And those children tend to be more easygoing, relaxed, like more sunny, more smiley. Mm-hmm. And the kids that have more activity on the other side tend to be more, you know, like, they cry more, they have a harder time with separation. Like it's just, they're just born differently. They're just wired differently. But even with that, like you can still change your, you know, the degree to which you feel, you know, your like happiness, your sense of well-being in life by doing deliberate things to increase that. And that was like, again, it sounds sort of like a dull now, but you know what? 20 years ago, this was like groundbreaking. Yeah, we had no idea. We kind of thought like, well, it's just kind of who you are.
Or thought that your circumstances massively impacted how happy
you are. I think that what the human brain does is we, and I really hard to consciously remember every minute of the day that whatever's going on, the traffic jam that you're in, the fact that your kid screamed at you this morning, the, you know, stressful thing that's going on at work or whatever, none of that is actually making you feel bad. It's very hard to remember that.
Yeah.
Because you are, the human brain wants to be like, oh yeah, no, I'm in a bad mood today because it's gray out and it's raining and, you know, I didn't have time to work out because blah, blah, blah happened. Like, no, you don't feel good because of the thoughts that you're thinking about all of those things.
That's one of the things, like, I remember where I was sitting when I was just introduced to the whole concept of being able to manage your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I told this at a speaking event I was at recently. I was sitting in a conference room in Los Angeles with the Coaches Training Institute, and they were talking about, I mean, essentially they were talking about the inner critic. They call it the saboteur, which mm-hmm. is mildly hilarious. And I'm like, you can't put a French name on it and like expect it to sound better. Like it's not like Yoplait.
Well, it's better to me than Gremlin. That True. Really makes me want to poke my eye out.
So the saboteur. And I remember thinking, like, I wanted to shout out, like, wait a minute, wait, are we all hearing this? Like, you mean to tell me the voice that I hear in my head that compares me to everybody else, that tells me mm-hmm. not to go for it because I'm going to look stupid. Like, I can, I have power over that. Like, sign me up. Who do I pay money to?
Right.
I went whole hog on it. They didn't, they taught us enough to help our clients, but I dove way in beyond the training that they had given us because I knew that that had the power to change my life if I could. And I love control anyway, so maybe that's another reason I was attracted to it. But I'm like, if I can control this, I'm in.
Yeah.
And it's
right. Awesome. And you can. Absolutely. It just requires practice. But here's what's so funny to me about managing your mind and, you know, doing thought work or working on your thinking and thinking on purpose. What I find so funny about it is if I said to any of my clients, like, okay, we're here and we're going to learn how to play tennis. That's what we're doing here. I'm going to coach you and teach you how to play tennis. In their mind, they would be completely fine with a few things. One, practicing frequently, right? Uh-huh. There's no way that there's no way they're going to get better without practicing it. Secondarily, they would have a timeline that was reasonable. I mean, like, probably not going to be, you know, Andre Agassi after a month.
Right.
So they would have
I know, like, exactly where this is going. I'm just waiting for you to tell
this. So my clients are like, with thought work, you're like, dude, honestly, like, why am I still thinking these thoughts? I'm like, because mm-hmm. it requires practice. Like, because thinking in a new way requires actual, like, roll up your sleeves practice every day, commitment. Right? With different exercises, asking yourself different kinds of questions, reframing things in your brain. The second you hear yourself going down one road, you're like, whoop, backtrack. Let's mm-hmm. try that again, right? Like, your forehand isn't working. They're all going into the net. And you're like, oh, low, gotta tweak something, right? But we don't do that with our brain. We're like, you know, we want it done yesterday.
Yes. You know, I'm so glad you said that. I can't even tell you. I used to do, I haven't done it in a long time. And And part of it was because I feel like I was attracting a lot of people who just like wanted that quick fix. So I would do this free 7-day challenge. And it was all about just learning the basics of starting to do that and learn how to manage your thoughts. And I had so many people who were like, okay, I tried the first tool and it worked for like 10 minutes. And then later on that day, I had negative thoughts again. And they're looking at me like, what gifts, Andrea Owen?
Like, what?
And I'm like, y'all, oh my God, you're essentially learning a new language. You have got to practice and commit. So that's the announcement for this episode. Yeah. You have to practice and commit.
Exactly. Like, love is a practice. Gratitude is a practice.
Worthiness,
acceptance is a practice. All of it is
for
a practice.
Sure. Well, speaking of practice, tell everyone how they can either work with you or follow you online and get more of the goods from Dr. Sasha Hines.
Yeah. Well, first of all, come hang out with me on Instagram. I am, as Andrea knows, I am Facebook phobic. So
before you continue, will you tell people what you told me about the study around Facebook and the $100,000?
Oh, yeah. So there's a lot of research on what actually makes us happier. And the truth is, everyone listening. I mean, I have social media too, but here's the deal. We would all be happier by canceling, deleting all of our social media feeds than we would if we got a $100,000 raise.
Right.
Like, we think that a $100,000 raise is going to make us exceptionally happier. There's a lot of research that shows that there's basically, which I think is mind blowing, but it's a $75,000 a year annual income, family income, actually, that seems to be sort of like the threshold where things kind of level out in terms of, well-being. Mm-hmm. So the idea is like basically from, below $75,000 a year as a family income, it does impact your well-being. You're like dealing with real financial stress and like trying to make ends meet and figure out how to make it work. Like, obviously we're talking about in the United States, because $75,000 family income somewhere else would be living large.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it seems like there's only a well-being increase. And this is really interesting, in one's evaluation of their life.
Yeah.
So their emotional happiness, like their feelings of happiness or their feelings of positive emotion, don't actually increase after that income threshold, but their evaluation of how they're doing in life does increase. So I think that that's really, really fascinating, because at the end of the day, it's like, oh, that all that means is like, oh, you're just managing your mind, right? Like, it's all your thoughts.
Yes, more evidence.
It's like you could be just as happy at $75,000 family income as you could at $1 million a year family income if you learn to manage your thinking.
Yeah.
Like, that's really what all it's saying, which I think is so fascinating.
It's
but
profound.
The takeaway is just cancel. If you just don't go on social media, you'd actually be
happier.
The magnitude of the effect is bigger for social media than it is for income.
That's so fascinating. Okay. So another reason you're not on Facebook, but you are on Instagram, and I follow you on Instagram.
Yeah.
And you do write really interesting things over there on your posts. It's not just a bunch of pictures of your kids.
Yeah. I love, it's just, I have a really fun time with my Instagram feed, and I love getting feedback from people that are following and like what they're going through and anyway, but yeah, it's sort of like what's on my mind, what I'm thinking about, what I'm working on with clients, a little inspo, and hopefully some truth. And then also my website. Come find me on my website.
DrSashaHines.com. And all of those links are in the show notes, everyone. Thank you so much for being here today. This has been super
fun.
It's always a treat to chat with you. And everyone, thank you so much for being here with us. I know that your time is so valuable, and the fact that you choose it with me and my guests means the absolute world to me. And until next time, everyone, I will see you all out in cyberspace. Bye-bye.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.